Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Mancos, Colorado, and became an All-American football player at the University of Utah. He starred for the Detroit Lions for 9 years as a defensive lineman, and he had the title of the strongest man in the NFL. He and his wife, Rebecca, are modern-day role models as they raised their 11 children. Yes, 11 children, six of which are adopted. He's the gentle giant, Luther Ellis. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the legendary Detroit Lion defensive lineman Luther Ellis, the gentle giant. Luther, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Yeah, Jack, I'd be happy to do that. My mom and dad were some fantastic parents. They always taught us about the value of hard work and setting goals and reaching to achieve those goals and trying to do our best to be the best of whatever we have. Grew up in a house that we went to church every Sunday. I say we were more religious than I actually have a relationship with Jesus Christ, but that didn't happen until later. But the values were there, the opportunity to say that, you know, everything that you do in life, you need to give your best effort, you need to do the best you can, because you're never going to have, you never know if you're going to have a second chance or not to try it again. So everything you do, do it with the best of your ability, and then whatever happens, happens. Let the chips fall where they may.
You grew up in this real little town,
mm-hmm.
in a three-bedroom trailer.
Yes, sir.
And many, many nights you had 8, 10, 12 people sleeping in that trailer. Cousins.
Yeah, neighbors. We did. You're exactly right. You know, my mom's from the islands, Samoa, Western Samoa. And a lot of our relatives would come over, send their children to us because they wanted to get them a better education. So they would come and live with us. So we always, like you said, had 3 or 4 extra guests in our house. And so we were sleeping wherever you could, double, triple up in the rooms and then out on the couches. And, you know, it was a home full of love. And however we could help, we would do that. So, yeah, but it's a small town, 800 people, 100 kids in our high school, 25 in my graduating class. And I won't tell you where I ranked in there, but it is a town that is very compassionate, very family-oriented, and very welcoming to a lot of people.
Anybody that meets you, Luther, sees this giant of a man, but your heart's bigger than your body. You've got a great love for people, and especially for kids. Where did you get that?
I think growing up in the way I did at home back in Colorado, where we always were helping people, inviting people in, I enjoy children because I feel like I'm at their level majority of the time. I'm just a big kid at heart, and that's who I am. And so anytime I get an opportunity through athletics, I've been blessed through athletics to be able to interact and be around children and be able to help them and give them a vision, hopefully give them a goal, give them somebody, a role model to look up to, and something that I've always thrived on and enjoyed. And I'm an extrovert at heart. I love to be around people, be in the audience, and enjoy people.
You go to Utah. You're an All-American football player. The Lions draft you. You go to the 2 Pro Bowls with us, 9 years, then the last year with the Denver Broncos. Talk to us about your football career.
Football, honestly, coming out of high school, football was not my first love. Basketball was. I thought I was going to be the next Michael Jordan. I thought I was going to, you know, soar through the air like him.
More and like Shaq than Bird.
Well, in my mind, I was going to be Michael. So, but you're right, more like Shaq. So when Utah came knocking on the door and those things, they wanted me for football. But Coach Rick Majerus at the time said I can come out and walk onto the team, and he allowed that to be. So that's one of the main reasons I chose Utah, along with coaching staff there. But I was excited that I could play dual sports in Division I, coming from such a small school. But I was fortunate enough to get there my freshman year and end up starting my freshman year for University of Utah, and then I ended up having a pretty good career there. And my love for football slowly transformed into where it became a priority instead of a secondary.
What's the difference between college football and the pros?
Oh, the biggest difference is just the athleticism, the speed of everybody. Everybody in the professional ranks you know, they're the best of the best. They're fast, they're strong, they're athletic. And just the mentality, that most of them have the mentality, the right edge, where some of them might not be the most athletic guys, but they had the mental edge. They had the heart to make sure that they can be in the professional ranks and do extremely well in the professional ranks.
We had Anthony Munoz on a couple weeks ago, another gentle giant, you know?
Arguably, actually, a lot of people tell me I look like Anthony. I'll say, hey, are you Munoz? I'm like, no, sorry, I didn't have that kind of career. But
how do you explain this vicious world of pro football? And then so many of you, Singletary, just have this huge heart, that dichotomy. How does that happen?
Well, I think football gives you, you know, I think there's a warrior inside of us all. Especially, you know, in us men. I think we all crave that, you know, we enjoy those movies, the battle scenes and those different things to go out and battle and fight for something. And football allows us, you know, we're modern-day gladiators, if you will, allows us to go on the field and let that go and be out there and fight and compete and then be able to walk off the field and be civilized again, if you will, and allow that to happen. So I just think it's a lot of our personalities. We're grateful. I think majority of NFL players, I don't think, you know, of course you see all the bad stuff that happens, and of course that's the limelight, but the majority of guys in NFL have a huge heart. They come from good backgrounds. Even from single-parent homes, they have moms who love them, cared for them, or dads, and that's been built into them. That's the character of the person, and that's what comes out.
A lot of kids today watch sports, and they see Albert Pujols, Jeter, Kobe, Tiger, and they don't realize how hard and how many thousands of hours it took to get that good. Talk to us about the hard work and the persistence required to get to the NFL.
Yeah, it was not an easy road, for sure. I mean, one, you got to be blessed with talent, and you got to have some ability. But two, you got to have the hard work, the heart to want to go out and do it. So growing up in high school, a lot of times on the weekends when my friends are out playing, doing things they probably shouldn't have been doing, I would go to the football field. I'd run. I'd do stadium stairs. I work on my basketball shot. I was always putting in the extra hours because, one, I read it in a couple books, Reggie White and a few other guys I looked up to that I would like to be like at one time. I saw what they talked about, what they did when they were younger and how they worked hard and put in the extra time. They worked, you know, they really worked on the skill, the craftsmanship of it, and becoming that expert at that skill. And so I started doing that. And through high school, even college, while the guys were going out, I'd be doing extra things, watching extra film, working on all the my weak links, if you will. You know, chain's only strong as its weakest link. And I had quite a few weak links, as I still do today. But I try to do my best to work on those and put in the extra effort. And even now, right now, working with my children, you know, some people, I think, sometimes automatically assume, hey, you're Luther Ellis' son or daughter, so you must be a great athlete. And even talking with them and working with them is just understanding that it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of extra work to have a chance, even one, to play and start in high school, then opportunity to go to college and start in college. And then from there, it's 1% of all collegiate athletes make it to the professional ranks. So to be in that elite class, you have to give that extra time and effort.
We're talking to Luther Ellis. When we come back, we'll ask him what football taught him about life. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Luther Ellis, and for 2 years, he was voted the strongest man in the NFL. I don't know if that transcends to the golf course, Luther, but...
I think, no, it does not.
What did football teach you, Luther Ellis, about life?
I think sports in general, not just football, but I think sports in general, that's why I encourage parents to get their children involved in any type of sport, whatever it is, lacrosse, baseball, volleyball, whatever it is that the child's interested in, get them involved in sports. And not only sports, even just the arts and different things. But I think for me, football just taught me life has its ups and downs. And the only way you're going to persevere and make it through is you got to push, continue to work hard, push through, and know that it's not going to be an easy road. You had times when you're on top of the world and everybody thinks you're the greatest guy and they pat you on the back and say, wow, if we had more guys like you. You have other times they're like, who are you? Why are you, how'd you even make it here? And what are you doing here? So, you got to learn to, through those ups and downs, you got to keep on track, stay strong, keep the character that you've been, that God's given you, that you've been built, your parents have helped build inside of you, and use that to continue to march forward. So right now we're all in down, you know, the economy's down, everybody's struggling right now. you know, those who are going to survive are going to be those who persevere, that know that, you know, I got to continue no matter what happens, continue to work hard, push through, and get over this and reach my goals.
God's blessed you, Luther Ellis, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You've stated that one of the biggest blessings was the day you met this Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
And you refer to her as your angel. Talk to us about your angel.
I mean, my wife, she's a very special woman. First and foremost, she's a Proverbs 31 woman. She's a godly woman. She loves the Lord first and foremost before all things. So that makes it a true blessing and a easier to be a dad that sometimes is I'm her 12th child.
All the time. All the time.
And not more her helpmate. But she is an amazing woman. Her heart and compassion. She's an introvert. I'm an extrovert. So she likes to be quieter. She likes quieter scenes, smaller get-togethers. But her heart for people, she absolutely loves serving. She would give the shirt off her back to anyone who would need it. She would do anything for anybody, and complete strangers. We've had a few times where, you know, we're driving and see somebody. It was one instance is after one of the games, we were heading back home, and there looked like it was a mother and her son were walking back, and it was storming pretty good. And, you know, I was thinking already, but she verbalized what I was thinking, like, hey, we need to stop and go see if they need a ride. And we turned around, went back and ride home. And, you know, it's just that's her heart. It's here are complete strangers. We don't know who they are, and they don't know really who we are. And here's two strangers picking them up, asking if they need a ride. But they were grateful, and got to talk to them a little bit and just enjoy their company for a few minutes as we took them home. But that just epitomizes who she is and what she's about, is that if she can help someone, she's going to give what we have, her own shirt off, her own back to help.
How'd you meet her?
Actually, we met through athletics at the University of Utah. She was a swimmer there. And through mutual friends, we started dating and going out. And I was fortunate enough, blessed enough to be able to have her to be my wife.
Remember that Refrigerator Perry with the Bears?
Yes.
He was a world-class diver at Clemson. They said he was the best diver in the school.
And that's amazing
there
thing about
no
that
water.
Body mass.
There was no water left after he dove. But, so.
Wow, that's amazing. Yes.
You and Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
Had five children, and you've adopted six. You got
yes.
11 kids. How did it happen?
We had three at the time, first time we adopted, and we were actually coming back from Hawaii. I believe it was an NFLPA union trip that we're coming back from. And on our way back, Rebecca's working out with one of her friends, and she started talking to Rebecca about there's this little biracial boy. He's a week old. Perfectly healthy, and there's no home for him to go to, and an agency had him. And she came home that day and asked me, hey, what do you think about adopting now? We talked about it. We said maybe down in the future we would do that, but she goes, why don't we try it right now? So we prayed about it, and the prayer was very quick. My wife was on. She was going to, if God would allow her, she was going. We're going to bring home this little baby boy. So we heard about him, I believe it was Tuesday. By the following Tuesday, we had him. That's how hard Rebecca worked. She stayed up, I think, 48 hours straight, getting all the paperwork done, doing our bios, doing everything that we needed to do. And it did help that being part of the NFL, we had a good relationship with the FBI, so they could do background checks and push that through for us quickly, and a few things like that. But it really was God's hand upon our first adoption that allowed us to go through with it and go there. But in our first year, we adopted three of our six children, and it just happened so quickly. But every story is a God story, and how it happened and what God allowed us to do, and they've been such a blessing. And when people see our family, we're truly a Heinz 57 family, all different backgrounds, ethnicity, but God has blessed us in the sense that when people look at our family photo, they're not sure who is and who's not adopted, which is a blessing.
Are there more in the future?
If Rebecca has her way, yes, there would be. We'd just buy one of these large buildings downtown, and we would help out all that we could. But you know, we're thinking maybe there's at least one more in the future. We talked about also doing foster care and get involved in different ways. And you know, there's such a great need here. The word tells us about taking care of the orphans and the widows, and it's not an option. We're, as believers, are called to do that. So in our hearts, it's what we feel like we need to do. And my wife, she started actually a foundation called My Abba's Heart, and it's all the proceeds and everything goes towards orphan care.
What was the name again?
My Abba's Heart.
If there's a couple listening, driving this evening, and they've been talking about adoption, and they don't know whether they should do it or not, Luther Ellis, what do you say to them?
When I talk to them, I always encourage them that they should take the first step. At least find out more information. Find out, contact either myself or, more importantly, my wife, because she knows it like the back of her hand. Contact someone who's adopted before or an agency and start talking, find out the logistics and different things of that. What does it take? What are the requirements? You know, what are the costs? What are the different things that, you know, they need to do to see if they can or would really want to continue pursuing this thought of theirs or the passion of theirs to adopt a child. So I would just encourage people, if they have any questions or anything like that, please get a hold of Rebecca or myself, and we'd be glad to help them.
A couple of weeks ago, we had Pat Williams, the co-founder of the Orlando Magic, mm-hmm. who had 5 children, and then they adopted 14, Luther.
Yes, yes.
And he talked about how all of the gym shoes and the shirts, everything had numbers on them.
Right.
They had 3 picnic tables put together. Every week, every Monday, the wife would put on the refrigerator, Cass, how do you guys manage with 11 children?
Well, Mr. Williams, he's an amazing story, and he's an inspiration to a lot of people, and we've thoroughly enjoyed reading about his story and things he's done. And that's great that he's so organized with a number system. For us, Rebecca, really, she is a type A personality, so she's very organized. And we don't have quite a number system. We have a buddy system. We have different chores and chore lists that they have to do and different things of that nature. But we're probably one of the most relaxed parents, if you will, far as organization, different things of that. Rebecca is very organized. I'm on the other side. I'm a no worries, Hakuna Matata. We'll get there when we get there kind of thing, and which drives my wife a little bit crazy. But she does a great job of doing it. And our children, especially my 2 oldest, Kaden and Olivia, they do a fantastic job of helping mom and dad. And all of them do, Christian, Noah, Isaiah. All our older children are great at helping and make sure that things are being done. You know, their beds are made in the morning, waking up praying and just engaging with the day.
When you guys go to Costco to shop, how many of those orange carts do you pull around?
When I go, I get at least 2, minimum of 2, and maybe my oldest son will grab a 3rd one. My wife's more efficient again. See, here's the difference right here again, being played out here is I grab 2 or 3 because I'm just grabbing everything and anything, and, you know, always grabbing extra quantities that, you know, we might need this much. Where she knows, she has her list, she knows exactly how much she needs, she knows how long it's going to last. She has all her, you know, she's just very well organized. So Rebecca does it with 1 cart. She goes twice a week, where I'll grab 2 or 3 orange carts and stack them as high as I can. You know, I'm walking down the aisle, people are like, oh my gosh, get out of the way, it's going to tip over. That's how full we load those carts.
We're talking to Luther Ellis. When we come back, we'll ask him about being a dad for 11 children. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Luther Ellis, and he and his wife, Rebecca, are raising 11 children, 6 of which are adopted. Luther, what's the biggest thing you and Rebecca are trying to teach these 11 children?
For our family, the biggest thing that we try to teach our children is about our faith, and that... you know, Rebecca and I have a strong belief in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and we try to impart that to our children, but in a way that they understand and know what Christianity is about, not just because it's what mom, dad has told them that they need to do or because we go to church on Sundays. It's because they are digging, they are asking the questions, and they are looking to own their own faith and understand it so that if somebody asks them, why do you believe, they can answer it for themselves, not just because, well, my mom, dad told me to.
Talk to us about praying as a family.
That's very important in our household. We pray quite often as a family. In the mornings we start, our children get up. They pray individually by themselves first, and then they make their beds and they come downstairs. And we try to have Bible studies in the morning and then pray as a family and encourage our children to bring up needs, concerns, anything that's going on in their little world, to share that so we can... ask and bring it before the Lord and do it as a family to encourage them to see that God works in miraculous ways, and especially when prayer is involved.
You've said, and I quote, that you encourage your children to own their faith. Luther Ellis, what do you mean, own their faith?
Well, I just really want them to understand that they're not Christians because of their mom, dad took them to church, or because mom, dad told them that's what they should be. That will only last for so long until they're truly challenged, or if they go to college or whatever, and a professor or somebody there challenges them on their faith. They won't be able to know it because mom, dad's not there to help them answer those questions. To own their faith means is take the time to read the Bible, question it. It's okay to ask tough questions and say, you know, did Jesus really walk on water? Did he really perform these miracles? How do we know the Bible's accurate? How do we know he is a man? Or how do we know he was even alive? Those different questions that multiple people have, we try to encourage them. We try to study as a family. We also encourage them to look on their own, especially my older children, Kate and Olivia. You know, we're also encouraging them to dig in deeper, ask questions. When you're with your friends, with your teachers, ask those questions, ask those difficult questions. And the great thing today is technology. We have the internet. The internet, there's a lot of information, good and bad information. But I encourage them to get on there, look, you know, go to credible sources. If you find someone there that you question, bring it. Let's talk about it. And so when I say own your faith, I don't want them to be fearful to ask questions or to doubt or to say, did that really happen, Dad? I mean, or ask me, Dad, did you struggle with anything about Christianity? Is there things you struggle with? So when it comes to that point in time when mom, dad are no longer right there holding their hands and doing those things, they're off on their own in the world and something trying, some trial or tribulation comes along, they could stand and say, you know what? I know it's true, and it's because of these reasons.
I've heard many times that the best thing a dad can do for his children is to love their mom.
I would agree wholeheartedly. Anything that my dad taught me was how he loved my mom. You could see it daily. By the way, he would just hug her and just show affection towards her and things he would do for her. And he loved her unconditionally. Now, it doesn't mean our household is perfect. It didn't mean they didn't fight or argue and different things that happen in our household. That I'm sure happens in a lot of households. But it was a relationship that, no matter what trial, tribulation they went through, how hard it got, the different arguments they've had that, you know, myself and my younger brothers and sisters and my cousins all heard and saw and different things that were said, and through all that, they still stuck together. Whereas I think today you see so many people bailing, leaving, getting divorces and saying, you know what, I'm going to go find something else better. No, they committed to their vows. They stuck to their vows and they lived it through. And the love my dad showed towards my mom helps me to love my wife. Not that I'm perfect at that either, but I've had to learn a lot of things and how to look at myself first before I pass judgment on my wife, which I know I'm not supposed to do, but had to really look internally first to make sure I'm doing what I need to do to make sure I can love her and let her know that she's loved. And my children, I think we are a very touchy family. We are hugging and kissing and just all touching each other. So hopefully it's being portrayed and lived out in our household.
Let's talk about self-esteem. I believe if we could give everybody in the world self-esteem, the vast majority of issues would go away. Luther Ellis, how do you try to give your 11 children true, healthy self-esteem?
You know, that's a great question. I just think... for us in our household with self-esteem, we always try to praise them when praise needs to be there. But also when they do things wrong or something happens, one is to catch myself, make sure that I don't go overboard or get too upset about it. Two is to take that moment, because that's what you call a teachable moment in our household, and take that teachable moment and help them to learn and grow through that and see how they could avoid it or maybe change the consequences that are happening, and to help them to understand that by making right choices and doing the right things, that is going to help improve your own self-esteem, that you don't need to beat yourself up over it. Once we dealt with it, it's done. It's over. It's water in the bridge. Let it go, and let's move forward.
What have your 11 children taught you, Luther Ellis?
Jack, that'd be a huge list of what they have taught me. But I think the greatest thing they've taught me is understanding a little bit more about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ's love for us, that his love for me is even greater than what I love my children, which I couldn't imagine loving my children or my wife any more than what I do, but that he loves me greater than that before, which he knew who we are, but far as my simple mind, before he even knew, before I was born, he was dying for me on the cross. It's an amazing love. And that's what's being portrayed through my children every day, is the relationship that I have with my father, is the relationship that I have with my children. And I have a lot of moments like that, what I call God moments, where something will happen between my children and myself, and I think, wow, what I read this morning in Matthew or Isaiah, it comes out. His word is just on the big screen in vibrant colors, saying, here it is. And my children have taught me through what kind of relationship that I have with my father depends on what kind of relationship I have with my children, and it's very much so portrayed in both.
What do you say to a dad tonight who's just lost his job, and he's had to go to his family and say, hey, we're out of work? Or a dad whose 28-year-old daughter's got cancer and says, oh, wait a minute, this is Jesus Christ you talk about. There's no God.
That's the greatest thing about Christianity, is that all you need to do is pick up a Bible and start reading and going through it. And the greatest thing about Christianity, there's no secrets, there's no myths, there's nothing. It's very open. It's from Genesis to Revelation. It's all pointing towards Christ, the coming of Christ, who he is, what he is, why we need him. There's such a story there that no matter what happens in our lives, even these tragic moments of your children being sick, losing a spouse, anything that happens in your life, Christ can help you overcome that and grow through that, through your relationship with Christ. And for those who are struggling with those issues right now, I just encourage them to pick up the Bible, start reading the book of John, which is in the New Testament, part of the four Gospels. Encourage them to pick that up, start reading, start praying, seek out a church, a Bible-believing church. Go talk to the pastors, talk to your friends who you think might be Christians, who are Christians that you know of, and just be point blank with them, because that's the greatest thing about a relationship with Jesus Christ. There's no hidden agenda. There's no secrets. It is just a relationship that knows that I'm a sinner, and because I'm a sinner, I need a Savior, and my Savior is through Jesus Christ. And it doesn't mean my life's going to be perfect as a Christian. No, when you give your life to Christ, it does not mean that. But what it does mean is when I go through these trials of tribulation, as some of these men are going through, or women or families are going through right now, that we have a foundation, we have a rock to stand upon that's going to get us through these trials and tribulation.
We're talking to Lou Thorelis, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the giant of a man, Lou Thorelis. But his heart is bigger than his body, a heart of gold. Luther, talk to us about tough love.
Oh, tough love is what I don't think we see enough in today's day and age. Not that I'm perfect at it, or my parents were perfect at it, but I think sometimes the biggest growth a child can have is during those tough love opportunities and things that happen in a family's dynamics. The tough love... taking away something that they were excited to go to because of being in consequence of something they did earlier in the day, or things of that nature. Those are the moments, as I think we all can attest to in our lives. If you think back to the most moments in your life that you've grown the most, is times in your life when things were really hard and tough, when you had to grow to the next level, you had to go to the next level, and you had to grow through maturity of experiencing the opportunity. So if I encourage parents of anything, don't try to be best friends with your children. Be their parents. Love them unconditionally. And you have those opportunities, those teachable moments, as I call them, those tough love moments. Do it. Make it. Make them understand why you're doing it. You know, always explain to them why you're doing it. Take time to talk with them. Love on them. Explain to them why you're doing it. And allow them to grow through those moments.
Lou Thorelis, what advice would you give to our dads tonight?
The greatest advice I I think I could give to a dad is what I have to continually remind myself is God first, family second, and job and anything else third. What I mean by that, and I know people have heard that before, but it's time. being selfless with our times, giving our wives and God the time first before ourselves. So many of us, including myself, would like to go hang out with the guys, go golfing, go to just, you know, hang out and go to the game or do those things with the guys. And we're missing a lot of great teachable moments, a lot of great moments with our family that could be life-changing for them. So I think the biggest thing I could encourage men to do is set aside time, block out time for it's just family time. You're not going to answer the phones. You're not going to be on the computers. You're not going to be worried about work. You're just going to disengage from the world for a minute. You're going to focus on the family, engage with your wife and your children, and see what kind of legacy you're going to leave.
What advice would you give to the wives tonight?
I got to be husbands. Careful there. you know, the biggest thing I think for me and what Rebecca does for me is just she encourages me. She encourages me. She stands by me. She supports me in the majority of the decisions that I make. And if she doesn't, she lets me know she doesn't support me in that decision. And we have actually grown to now to where we won't make decisions unless we both agree on it. We'll be patient and we'll wait and see what happens till one of us comes alongside the other one. But I think the greatest thing I can encourage the wives or the women out there to do for their men is just to stand by and let them know that you support them, that you believe in them, and that you're there with them.
Lastly, what advice would you give to Rebecca tonight?
The advice I'd give to my wife. Jack, wow. I don't know what I would say to that, Jack.
Yes, dear.
I think that's the advice that I'd give to myself. Just keep saying yes, ma'am, because she is an amazing woman again. And I love her unconditionally, and she supports me in so many ways that only advice I could probably give her is just, you know, I don't know.
Have me for another day. Have me for
another day. Yeah, you know, that's great. I just don't know. So,
Pat Williams, one of the things Pat Williams talks about in the books that he's written is the importance of character in being a dad. Mm. What role does character play in being a dad?
Wow. It's huge just because I look at it, there's so many things about your character. When you give your word, let your yes be yes and your no's be no's, especially with children. When they see their dad tell them something and they live up to it, helps to create that credibility inside of you for your children, but also more importantly for them knowing that when you let your yes be yes and your no's be no's. Just character issues and how you deal in situations and do you speak truth or not, or do you stretch it? And, you know, as parents, we all know this. Our children watch very close. They're absorbing everything that we're doing. They pay attention to every little detail, whether we think they are or not, whether that we think they can hear us or not, whether they think it's a conversation maybe that's over their heads and they don't understand. They understand. Majority of the time, they understand. And my children have many times that say, hey, Dad, what'd you mean by that? And I thought it was a conversation they weren't understanding or something of that nature. But the character that I had to portray to them and do it all the time is what I put out there has to be who I am at home, and the children know that. And for my children, just teaching them through those teachable moments again, when I make mistakes, that's part of your character too, is when you make mistakes, are you able to go tell that person you're sorry and apologize to them and let them know that I was wrong?
The two sayings: one, your actions scream so loud, I can't hear a word you say. And the second one, the greatest sermon ever given had no words.
That's true. So true. Well, and that's as what we were studying last night as a family. We talked about some of the people out there, the only Bible that they will ever read is by watching your actions. And I think it speaks very loud volumes of what character is.
In doing this show for 4 years, I find that the people that are most peace with themselves have learned to totally trust God and surrender to Him. Very hard for us to do.
Yes.
How have you tried to do that?
Well, for me personally, it's a daily battle. It's a daily, every minute, every second of my life, because my flesh and my desires and my wants and things don't always line up to what God would want me to do or what His Word tells us to do. So for me, it's a daily battle. I have to get up. I have to pray in the morning. I have to study His Word in the morning. Throughout the day, I pray. As I am here today, I have my Bible with me. I carry my Bible anytime I have meetings and those things, just to remind me that there's something greater than myself and my family and what's the task at hand, that I'm here serving God. And by serving Him, He says, work as unto the Lord, not as unto men. Everything that I do, I try to do as for the Lord, and try to remember that, you know, even though no matter how bad I want to be one way or something else, or God, trust me, you follow me this time, I'll pull you along. Those things never work out. So for me, it's just spending time with Him daily, having accountability, seeking the Lord continuously throughout the day, praying continuously, because if I don't do that, I can so easily get wrapped up in the world, wrapped up in my flesh and my desires, and forget about the Lord.
Lastly, on this Father's Eve, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight, Luther Ellis?
I think I would go back to what I was just saying there, that everything you do in life, you never know if you're going to have a second chance or not. It's first impressions. With every first impression goes your character, goes who you are as a person, and by what you do out there. So I encourage all the young people that no matter what it is, whether you're just weeding the yard, working at school, doing your school work, how you treat your friends, what you do on the computer when you think you're all alone and nobody's seeing you, do everything as you would unto the Lord. Work like there's not another day, another opportunity that's going to be presented to you again. Give everything that you have into whatever task, even as little or small as it is. Maybe it's just picking up trash in a lot or whatever it might be. Whatever that task might be, give everything you have, because you never know who's watching, what's happening. And some of the greatest stories that come out of those small opportunities that when you don't think anybody's watching, somebody saw something and they gave you an opportunity because of the way you did it, the way you worked with excellence.
Luther Ellis, honored to have you. A modern-day role model with Rebecca.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for all you do.
Thank you for what you do.
Our guest next Sunday will be another football personality, Era Parsegian, the legendary Notre Dame coach. 9 years ago, 3 of his grandchildren came down with Niemann-Pick's disease and died. And he and his wife have raised $35 million. He's now 85 years old, trying to eradicate this disease. Happy Father's Day. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.